Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to episode 12 of the NBL Pocket Podcast. Today we're going into the NBL semifinals. This is a preview show, and we'll be doing a review show probably on the Friday after the games. Why not? As we all know, the way it finished up, Perth finished on top, followed by Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. So as it stands, Melbourne will play Sydney and Perth will play Brisbane. First game of which is Melbourne playing Sydney, and that is going to take place on Thursday the 28th of February. Both games will actually take part on Thursday. The Melbourne game is going to be at 7:50, whereas the game in Perth will be on at much later. Eastern Standard Time, we're looking at 10:20 is the tip-off. Anyhow, let's jump straight into it. Let's go with the first game that will be played, which is Melbourne, second place, 18-10, $1.61, versus third place, Sydney Kings, 18-10, $2.32. That's according to sportsbet.com.au. Season record, 3-1 in favour of Melbourne. They played, the four times in round 4, 7, 10, and 17. Melbourne won the first three encounters, and then Sydney won the fourth. All very close. Let's go through them one by one and get a better understanding of these two teams. So round 4, Melbourne 77 defeated Sydney 70. Chris Golding did not play in this game, and Sydney were coming off a game 2 days earlier against Illawarra. DJ Kennedy was kind of the stand-up for Melbourne. He had 24 points and 10 rebounds. Casper Ware, bit of a low light for them. He had 9 points, 3 assists, 3 of 13, 23% shooting. I was trying to find some team stat discrepancies that really put one team in and over. And there was nothing there was just no direct correlation between one stat and anything else. But the ones that I thought were the closest measure of who's going to win this series were turnovers, free throws, and bench points. The biggest being fewest turnovers. It's a pretty pencil-thin thing to cling to. I mean, rule of basketball is the less you turn it over, the more chance you have of winning. But anyway, in round 4, in the Sydney loss, Melbourne had 10 turnovers, Sydney had 13. Melbourne also had the free throw disparity. They shot 20 attempts, made 15. Sydney, on the other hand, had 12 attempts and only made 4. And then the bench points was 12-19 in favour of Sydney. So you see there, the team that has got the fewest turnovers has won. Then the next played again in round 7, Melbourne 84, defeat Sydney 82. In this game, Mitch McCarron was still coming off the bench. Obviously, that's now changed, and it's Chris Golding who's coming off the bench. Casper Ware was incredible in this game, 23 points, 6 assists, and then Jerome Randall had 35. Barn burner of a game from both teams, really, and 2-point loss. So I watched it again. I just couldn't really see a huge advantage for either side. It was just an absolute dogfight. But again, we go back to turnovers. Melbourne only had 10 and Sydney had 13. You look at free throws. Melbourne were 13 of 17. Sydney had 20 of 28. And that is the only time in this series that the team that shot more free throws lost. The other three occasions, whoever shot more free throws won the game. Not necessarily made more free throws, but had more free throw attempts. So whichever team's going at the rack seem to have the advantage. And then bench points again. Melbourne had 25, Sydney had 29. So Sydney's bench was the highest scoring bench, but it didn't equate to the win. Again, the only stat that is consistent between these is turnovers. Next time these two teams met was in round 10. Sydney 70, defeated by Melbourne 75. So this was a loss in Sydney. Again, the Kings had played 2 days earlier against Cairns. And the only reason I mention whether Sydney's played games in close succession to this game is because it's such a factor for the Kings. It's not a huge deal for Melbourne, I don't think. That older roster of the Kings, and in particular Bogut, Newley, Kickett, they need that time off. So I'm not surprised they blew this one. This was the one in which Bogut was pretty upset with his bench. But again, in this game, Casper Ware had 8 points, 3 of 13, 5 rebounds, 7 assists. But we go to the turnovers. Turnovers, Sydney had 7, Melbourne had 7. So we were tied. Free throws, Sydney went 9 of 12. Melbourne went 10 of 18. And then bench points, 15 for Sydney, 21 for Melbourne. Going into then round 17, this was Sydney's only win of this series. Sydney 97, defeat Melbourne 85. Turnovers, Sydney only had 8. Melbourne had an astronomical 17. Free throws, Sydney was 17 of 19, Melbourne 7 of 11. And then bench points, Sydney had 34, Melbourne only 26, or plus 8 advantage there. So, I mean, you look at it here, and the team with the fewest turnovers went 4-0. The team with the most free throw attempts went 3-1. And the team with the most bench points went 2-2. So there's a lot of people out there saying that, you know, the Sydney bench can't keep up and they're in trouble. They've actually won the bench scoring anyway. I probably should have taken into account turnovers and things, but as far as a scoring point goes, they've won that battle most of the time, but it hasn't necessarily equated for wins. You look at turnovers, I mean, Melbourne average about 13 turnovers a game. That's the second most in the league, whereas Sydney only averaged 10.5, which is eighth in the league. So Sydney give up the fewest. Melbourne always give up the most. They were second, and not by a short margin. They're almost top of the league in turnovers. Melbourne average 19.5 free throw attempts. Sydney average 18, so not a huge discrepancy there. And then bench points. Melbourne's bench averages 24.6 points per game. Sydney's bench average 25. So looking at the numbers, these two teams are just absolutely playing each other to a dogfight. And I mean, you look at that there. I mean, I think turnovers, particularly for Melbourne, when they lost that game, they were turning the ball over like crazy. And I mean, throwing away passes, getting picked off, getting their pocket picked, getting really hassled out of pick and roll and not making good decisions, dribbling into traffic. They didn't know how to score in and around the Sydney Kings. And I think it's going to be the determining factor of the series. I really do. Liam Santamaria wrote a nice little article in The Week about which players he thinks are going to be X factors in each series. He put as the X factors in this series, as rather predictably, DJ Kennedy and Daniel Kickett. DJ Kennedy, the last 8 games, is averaging 15.6 points per game, 10 rebounds, and 4.7 assists. That leads Melbourne United in all three of those categories. Kickett, however, when Kickett scores 10-plus points, Sydney are 10 and 13. When they won that game in round 17, he went off. I don't know how many points, but he definitely had over 10. He probably had over 15, and I remember him hitting everything. I'm not sure he missed from the field, or if he did, he shot at a super high percentage. And I would concur with Santamaria on that. I think, especially when we talk about DJ Kennedy, what lineup are we going to see him in? Is DJ Kennedy going to be in that starting lineup of Casper, McCarron, himself, Barlow, Boone? Or are we going to see Vickerman go to that small ball lineup of DJ Kennedy, Barlow, McCarron, Casper Ware, and Chris Golding? That lineup has got good numbers. If you look on, I've got it in front of me, HoopsDB, that lineup with them, has got an offensive rating of 119, which is their highest offensive rating of any lineup, and a pretty decent defensive rating of 106.7, which is not their worst lineup, which is still pretty good, a net rating of 12.3. Hasn't seen a lot of minutes. It's only seen 56 minutes this season. To put that in perspective, some of Melbourne's bigger lineups are around the sort of 200. Well, their starting lineup was played 191 minutes, and then the other bench lineup, when Chris Golden comes in, is playing 126. This lineup, the small ball lineups, only played 56. So small sample size, but when they went, it's been effective in the numbers. But when they went to it against Sydney, it kind of cost them the game. And the simple fact was, and if you go to my Twitter account, you'll see where I asked Liam Santamaria the same question. What do they do? How do they get Bogut in scoring action? And the secret was, not the secret, but I think certainly the strategy was, when Bogut hits that screen or gives that pick and roll, with this small ball lineup, they're looking to double, blitz the screen, double Jerome Randall coming off or whoever it may be. And then try and recover to the big guy. Bogut's got to set that pick, and he has got to rim roll. He's got to look to catch that ball, whether it be at about the foul line. If he sets a high pick around the three-point line, roll to the foul line, catching it. And from there, he can't just come to a two-footer jump stop and look for a pass. He's got to keep going to the basket. I really think for Sydney to win this series, he's got to score 20-plus points. He's got to do something against that small ball lineup. The other one is kick it. He killed them in round 17. He absolutely killed them popping off pick and roll. Him and Jerome Randall really won that game. But Melbourne have to take care of the ball. So it's a kind of a three-pronged thing for this one, in my opinion. Look at the questions of the series. Which Casper Ware is going to show up? Casper Ware has shot under 40% for the last six games, in which Melbourne have still gone 4-2, but they had a couple of really bad losses, one against Cairns, and who else did they lose to? Probably Sydney, I don't know. But they're 4-2. He's shot poorly against Sydney in the past. You know, in two of their games, as I highlighted, one game he shot 23% for 9 points. Another game he shot 3 of 13. I don't know what that percentage is, but it's not good. So, you know, what Casper Ware is going to show up? Is it going to be an aggressive looking to score Casper Ware or a back-footed looking to pass Casper Ware? Who knows? Well, we're about to find out. He will have to shoot well for them. He will have to score as well. I don't think it's a situation where he can come off pick and roll and be looking to distribute. He's a huge part of their scoring, and they're going to need it. The next question of the series for me, number two, is Newley versus DJ Kennedy. You know, a lot can be said about Jerome Randall and Ware and Casper Ware. They're going to play each other to a stalemate, I think. I think they're just both real classy players. Bogut and Boone, I actually think Bogut's going to win that matchup for two reasons. One, I think Bogut's had a couple of bad games against Boone, but I think he's set to really come out in this one, especially with the rest they've had this 2 weeks, especially in game one. And I think he's going to be... I think he's going to win that matchup. And then also the fact that I don't think Boone's going to play a lot of minutes in this series. I think Vickerman's going to try his luck with that smaller lineup with Kennedy, Barlow, McCarron, Casper Ware, and Golding. I think that's how he sees himself winning this game. I actually kind of feel it's kind of a bit of a mistake. Sydney are the best in the league at defending the three-point line. Okay, so according to RealGM.com, Sydney are bottom in defending. They are the stingiest, the best defenders of the three-point arc at 0.312. Melbourne, by comparison, 365. So you see there. And a lot of people have said, oh, you know, rebounding with the Sydney Kings is an issue. Well, to me, I think it's never easy. But in basketball, you've got to give up something to get something back. And if you're going to defend the three-point line that well, yeah, you're going to give up rebounds because you've got defenders, bodies out on the perimeter, closing out to those shots and closing out hard. It's going to happen. We talked about Melbourne turning it over in the past. I mean, Sydney don't force a lot of turnovers. They're actually bottom in the league at forcing turnovers at 10.5. So, you know, that's not good. Let me just check. Sorry, it's a bit of a... bit of a hodgepodge with looking at stuff on here. I just needed to, I couldn't take all these notes. I had to actually have it in front of me. So turnovers, Melbourne commit 11.7 a game. Sydney just behind them 11.1. So, you know, we talked about Melbourne needing to take care of the ball. They're middle of the table in turning it over. Not a huge discrepancy between the two teams. So one defense is going to have to step up either way. Either Melbourne's going to have to take care of the ball, or Sydney's going to have to force some errors. But going back to what I was saying about the matchups, that Newley versus DJ Kennedy, I think it's going to be Newley to defend DJ Kennedy for most of the time. I don't think David Ware has really got it in him. I think they'll both kind of stagger those minutes and do a bit of damage, both of them. But in the matchup when Sydney won, it was Brad Newley's game. And he's got a really tough ask. And that's going to be, to me, the real... the other two matchups, Boone, Bogut, Ware, and Randall are going to play themselves to a stalemate, I think. But it's that one that's the big one. And what is Chris Golding going to do? Is Lish going to defend Casper? Is Lish going to defend Golding, which he traditionally has in the past, I believe? Really interesting question. I would think Lish would defend on Golding. And we'll see what happens. But that's the matchup to watch right there. Newley versus DJ Kennedy. Third question for the series. Can Sydney get production and consistency out of both their bench in predominantly Kickett, Bowen and Adnam, and then production out of David Ware? David Ware, against Melbourne, has scored 3, 6, 0 and 6 points in the four contests. He's grabbed 1 rebound, 4 rebound, 4 rebounds, 3 rebounds in 20 minutes. Not a huge amount of time, averaging 20 minutes a game. You know, if you were to bump that up to 30, he'd be averaging sort of 9 points and 6 or 8 rebounds, which is not terrible, but I actually really hope he can have a good series. He's had an up and down year, a very odd year, especially for an import, but he did have that big game in Perth where he hit a couple of big shots, but also actually played well throughout. I hope maybe Melbourne get lulled into a false sense of security and think, okay, well, in our defense, we're going to go off him. And I think that would be a mistake. We shall see. The other one is Brian Bowen. So I talked about how, you know, this bench is going to have to hold up. Both benches are going to have to hold up, but certainly Sydney's, which has come under fire by critics and some people within the Sydney Kings team. To me, I've always thought Brian Bowen, a lot of guys are down on Brian Bowen. They don't think he's that good. I actually disagree. I think for a lot of basketball people think, oh, you know, he's just athleticism and he's just this and that. And, you know, for basketball purists who think, you know, oh, you move the ball and you do all this. But unfortunately with basketball, it's not a democracy. If you're able to run faster and jump higher than everyone, you're going to get results. Now, whether you're going to win the whole thing or whatever, but you're going to get results. And, I mean, James Ennis had a pretty good rounded game, but his athleticism was so far beyond everyone in the league that it netted him 10 points, most of which were massive dunks in traffic. I think Brian Bowen can be that player, and he needs to be that player. And it's not so much in his scoring, certainly in his transition. He needs to get out on the floor and run, push those big long legs. But it's more the rebounding, I think. When he's in the game, you know, you can defend all you want, and you got to finish off plays with rebounds. And I think with him, a lot of guys, you know, do the typical rebound of get a guy on your back and whatever. But when you're able to get a guy on your back, and then go up and actually meet that ball as it just comes off the rim, which he does, it's an asset, and hopefully they can draw it out of him consistently in this series. Because if you look at it here, and also with his scoring, he loves that corner three. I don't know what his shot chart is from there, but it would be pretty high. But Brian Bowen has scored in double figures in 7 games this year for Sydney. They're 5-2 when he does. It was against Brisbane, Melbourne, New Zealand, Cairns, and New Zealand. Now, not the best smattering of teams, but you do have in there Brisbane and Melbourne. The last time they played, he had 12 points, 5 rebounds. In the two games where Sydney came closest to beating Melbourne, so round 17, he had 12 and 5, in which Sydney won. In round 7, when they were 2 points away from losing, he had 15 and 5. And then in round 10 and 4, he had less than 5 points and four rebounds was the best he got. So he had 5-2 in one game and 2 points and 4 rebounds in the other. So he is a little bit of a show for them. He is a guy who can contribute. I just also thought in the early season losses, Sydney had a lot of dead minutes out of guys who have now fallen out of the rotation. Primarily, and I don't mean to single anyone out, but Dane Pinner and Deng, both those guys got considerable minutes around about the sort of 8 to 10 minutes each. Obviously in the finals, unfortunately for them, I don't think they'll see court time. So, you know, those minutes get redistributed to the starters. So there's a couple of bright sparks for Sydney coming into this game. You know, the record in Melbourne is not good. I think it's something like 22-9 in favour of Melbourne. So we shall see. Fourth question of the series for me, and really, well, game one and the whole series, is Josh Boone going to step up? What Josh Boone are we going to see? Are we going to see a Josh Boone that plays well and stays on the floor in the fourth quarter? Or are we going to see a Josh Boone who's not as engaged, not getting enough touches, not rim rolling as hard as he should? And then they go to that small ball lineup, which I think on paper, Paul Hanare and Dean Vickerman thinks is a good idea, but I don't know. It didn't actually. You're only as good as your last game, and I can only comment. I can only sort of call things on how they were the last time. And and it didn't do it. It got absolutely smacked by Sydney. But yeah, is Josh Boone going to step up? We're about to find out. So, I mean, but having said all that, I mean, what a series that we're in for with that Melbourne-Sydney series. I mean, look at these matchups. Josh Boone and Andrew Bogut. DJ Kennedy and Brad Newley. Casper Ware and Jerome Randall. Like, they are, to me, I think the best three-point guards in the NBL are Bryce Cotton, Jerome Randall, and Casper Ware in that order. And those two are playing off each other. Oh, my gosh. And then Chris Golding and Kevin Lish. So much drama. I mean, you got Chris Golding, who's a huge flopper. Kevin Lish, who's the best defender in the league, perimeter defender in the league. So, oh, my gosh. It's going to be so exciting. Thursday, 28th. If you're in Melbourne, you really got to be there. That's all I've really got to say on that series. Other than that, there's a really good preview by... what's his name? I think it's Warren Yu. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He did a very good preview that really echoes everything I've said about Melbourne and Sydney in that one. And yeah, definitely read that. That's I've retweeted it on my Twitter account, or find him. That's Warren, WARREN, and then YIU, Warren Yu. He's a writer for ESPN Australia and New Zealand. Let's go into the second game of the semifinals. Perth, 18-10, $1.35 versus the Brisbane Bullets, 14-14, $3.21. That's on Thursday, 28th of February at 10:20 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time. So obviously this one's being played out in Perth. Season record, 2-2. But, you know, really Brisbane are 1-0 against Perth when they have Lamar Patterson. Every game in this series has been won by the home team. So really, I'm not going to actually look at the three other games without Lamar Patterson that these two teams played against each other. I just don't think that's really worth our time. They're two different teams. They had two different imports and a whole bunch of things. Also keen to remember is in round 10, Brisbane didn't have their second or third import, I guess, in AJ Davis. He joined the squad after that time. So in that game, round 10, Brisbane 93 defeated Perth 86. I was really watching that game. Really, really great game, by the way. The biggest team stat discrepancies, points in the paint, Brisbane 44, Perth 26. Bench points 22-5. This is when Perth was still struggling to find their identity. What was funny in this game is people say Mitch Norton, he wasn't actually in this game. Well, he played, but he was actually thrown out of this game for a flopping violation. I mean, the worry for Perth is you look at the scorers in this game. Cotton had 29, Nick Kay had 22, Tirico White had 17, albeit on 37% shooting. But they all got off. You know, it was a high-scoring game, 93-86. Perth are not a high-scoring team. Except when, you know, they're going to get their 30 points out of Cotton. Where are they going to get those other sort of 40 to 50 points to get them to a winning margin? You know, you have to put up at least 85 in this league to win. So there are some worry signs for Perth. I don't think they're going to be exposed in this series, but they may. Yeah, you look there. I mean, the problem was Cam Glidden got off as well, 24 points. Lamar Patterson had 17 in what was one of his first games in Australia. And Mika Vekona had just a typical Mika Vekona stat line of 6 points, 5 assists, 4 blocks. And then Tarangi had 10 points. So it was an interesting game. It showed me, if you rewatch this game from round 10, you see that I don't really think Perth have a great matchup against Lamar Patterson. And I think the question was actually put forth by Shane Heal on the Basketball Australia show, the Basketball Show Australia. Who's going to guard him? You know, and really you've got, that's my first big question of the series. Who's going to guard Lamar Patterson? And your options are Tirico White, who mainly did it in round 10, Damian Martin, Jesse Wagstaff, or Greg Hire. They're the four options. In that game, you can only really go by what you've seen. It was predominantly White and Wagstaff and Martin. Hire had a turn on him and did not fare so well. Wagstaff as well. And Damian Martin, great defender, but he is a bit small. And White, obviously, you know, they did okay, don't get me wrong, but when he looked like he wanted to score, Lamar Patterson scored. So that odd little matchup of who's going to guard him, how are they going to guard him, is going to be interesting. My next big question of the series is, what defense will the Brisbane Bullets throw at Bryce Cotton? Are they going to play him straight up and just hassle him with the likes of, probably not Jason Kidd, I don't know if he's up, but you know, Adam Gibson, spent a lot of time on him in this game in round 10. It was predominantly Gibson and Cam Glidden. And then the third one is, of course, AJ Davis. We haven't seen a lot of him this season. Lamanis has kind of gone, are they going to give him some time on him? Or if he's doing well, are they going to leave him out there? And really what this series says to me, this Perth-Brisbane series, is the NBL is a tough league. You only get 28 regular season games to work out what kind of team you are and who can contribute and how they can contribute. Imagine if the series was like in the NBA four times as long, almost 3.5 times as long. You'd have so many more games to try different lineups and things. As a coach in the NBL, you've just got to be so, you've either got to take a huge leap of faith and try a lot of things or not. And that's really my biggest question, my third question of the series is, which coach is going to be willing to make on the fly changes to take advantage of a weakness or a strength? You know, I think and with basketball, you're dealing with personality, not just the game itself. You can look at the numbers all you want, but when you're making those calls in game, you've got Trevor Gleeson and the Wildcats, who are very much like, we're going to play defense, we're going to grab offensive rebounds, and we're going to play through Bryce Cotton. That's just how they're going to. That's just how they're going to do it. They're going to be a stingy defensive team. That's how they've done it for the past 20 years. And then you've got Andre Lamanis, who's there with the weight of, you know, he's the coach of the national team and the team sort of underperformed and just scraped in. Is he going to be able to, you know, play from the hip and be a bit of a cowboy and fiddle around with his lineups in the semifinals? He has not shown himself to be particularly footloose and fancy free with his lineups to this point, you know. But I think it was, Liam Santa Maria again had that nice little article about X factors in the playoffs, and he had in this series Clint Steindl, and he said that when Clint Steindl hits two or three 3-pointers, Perth are 12-13. When Clint Steindl hits four or more, Perth are 5-0. But I mean, when most teams have a guy hit four or five threes, they typically win. That's very difficult to do in a 10-minute quarter game. But you know, the certainly the two or three 3-pointers for 12-3 changes things and is very achievable for Perth, both in this series and others. So you know, that'll be interesting to see. And the other one Santa Maria said was a X factor was Mika Vekona. Mika Vekona has scored in double figures 5 times this season, and Brisbane are 5-0. Brisbane are plus 86 when Vekona's on the floor and negative 63 when he's off the floor. And this really begged the question for me, and I wish I had written it down. How many games this year did Brisbane come from behind? I think it was something like 20. And they came back to win these games. My thought is, if you look at that, if you look at what Vekona does, imagine if Lamanis just said, you know what, we're huge underdogs. I mean, you see there, Perth $1.35, Brisbane $3.20. That's three times as unlikely to win. Does Lamanis just go, we're underdogs and we're going to, you know, we're going to do something confusing and different and just start a team of, you know, sit either Hodgson or Besto and go with a team of, say, Besto, Vekona, Glidden, Patterson, Kadee? Is he going to do that? Is he all of a sudden going to start playing Jeremy Kendall more minutes? I've loved Jeremy Kendall all year. I think he's fantastic. I think he comes off picks. He looks to shoot. He looks to create. He can be a little bit trigger happy, but you know, I think he's the type of guy who should get, you know, 3 to 4 minutes every quarter. I don't think he's the type of guy you got to nurse by putting him into the starting lineup. I think you can just bring him on to end quarters and do separate things. Is he going to give AJ Davis minutes? You know, so a lot of I'm a little bit surprised with Lamanis, and Warren said this in his article too. You know, he's been pretty stingy with the way he's done his rotations. big for big, pretty simple, hasn't really gone crazy. There is a particular lineup that's a nice little touch for them. Let's see if I can bring it up. I mean, you look here at their lineups. His favorite lineup. This is a lineup that has seen 225 and a half possessions. Their next closest lineup has had 91 possessions. So this lineup of Bairstow, Glidden, Kadee, Patterson, Hodgson, their starting lineup, has played 120 minutes. Their next most used or popular lineup has played only 46 minutes. Cam Glidden, Kadee, Patterson, Vekona, Tarangi. And I mean, you look at it. Let's look at some of these sort of true shooting percentages and offensive rating. That lineup, their team with the best offensive... Yeah, there you go. Whoa! Sorry. A lineup of Bairstow, Glidden, Kadee, Patterson, and Vekona has an offensive rating of 134.6. I think Warren brought this up in his article. They also hemorrhage points at 138.5. But that's a lot of points. And you know, with Perth, like, are they a team that's capable of just scoring a lot of points? I'm not so sure. And that's where this team, I think you just... And teams have done it. Adelaide's got wins out of Perth doing this. Don't let Cotton do it to you. Double them. Force it out of everyone's hands. And if I was looking at them on paper, I'd be going, we got to make it... We can let Cotton get 30, but he's got to shoot 30% to get there. We're going to come off... If you look at the numbers, you want to come off Tarico White and Damian Martin in that lineup and Angus Brent. If you have to double off those guys to either stop Cotton catching the ball or make it difficult for him when he does, I think you got to do it. And if Damian Martin scores a lot and you lose, well, you know, I think that's a fair strategy that you can turn around to yourself and say, you know, we tried. But, you know, it'd be very interesting to see in these finals how much those smaller lineups for Brisbane get into the game. Those, you know, either where they either go with Bairstow or Hodge and play the rest of them with Vekona. I think the big X factor in this series is going to be Ruben Tarangi. What is he going to bring? Is he going to shoot well? He had a bit of a slump towards the end of the year. Had some great games through most of the season, but his last couple... his stroke kind of failed him a few times. Maybe he's had a break. Maybe those winning those two awards have boosted up his confidence. We shall see. He had a nice little game for them in round 10, hitting 10 points on a high percentage. It'd be interesting to see how much Brisbane go to that smaller lineup with Vekona. Looking at the next big question of the series before we go to the matchups, will Perth perform to the Tom Hirsch index? We've spoken about the Tom Hirsch index. He wrote a piece sort of, again, around about sort of round 10 or 11 when Mitch Norton went down. And obviously his pointers there are Perth going to get off to a good first quarter start? Are they going to win the offensive rebounding battle? Is Angus Brandt going to give them a little bit of scoring and secondary, sort of not playmaking, but secondary action? Is the bench and Jesse Wagstaff going to give them something? In the game in round 10, Wagstaff did not give them a lot. I think he had donuts all across the board. Yeah, Wagstaff all across the board, played 8 minutes, no stats of any kind, one turnover. I mean, Jesse Wagstaff, this could be his last hurrah. I hope it's not. He's now sort of early to mid-30s. His season averages of, say, 6 points per game, 38% from the field, 2.1 rebounds and 43 free throw attempts are career lows in everything. And if you want to look at a guy who's on the wing, you have to be able to get to the line. It shows that you've still got pep in your step and you've got thing. His free throw attempts of 43 total is sort of half what he did last season or thereabouts. You know, so if Perth are relying on, I mean, you look at that index, the Hirsch index. First quarter starts, you'd think so, especially in Perth. Offensive rebounds, that's a tick. They're gonna win that one. Angus Brandt and the bench and Wagstaff, you know, they're two guys that, you know, and in the bench you're predominantly looking at Clint Steindl. You're relying on three guys that, you know, Wagstaff's got a great reputation but has not had his best year. And then the rest of the bench and Angus Brand, you know, would you put money on that? Yeah. Free throw attempts, like they've got to be aggressive and get to the line. They're a plodding offensive team. They don't score a lot of points. They don't shoot a huge percentage. They need points when the clock stops. And then obviously limiting their turnovers. If you're a team that doesn't shoot well and you have to go and get it off the board, you don't want to be turning it over. And no cotton watching. And that really comes, cotton for me, comes the no cotton watching thing comes down to Nick Kay. What's he going to do? Is he going to have those games of those triple doubles and things? You would hope so. So, I mean, looking at it there, you look at Brisbane and this matchup, and there's not the huge, big, bold matchups that you had in Melbourne versus Sydney, but you've still got sort of Lamar Patterson versus, say, Tarico White. You've still got Kadee and Adam Gibson versus Damian Martin and Cotton. And, you know, it's a bit of a sort of hodgepodge, this series. If I can make my predictions now, I think Perth are going to win this one. I actually think Brisbane are going to win their game two in Brisbane and then come back to Perth and get beaten. I just don't think you can do that. Perth is such a tough place, and all those teams, especially Melbourne, must be so sore with themselves for giving up that top spot so easily to Perth. Sydney, they've got a bad home record. Who cares if you gave up first place to them? And Melbourne obviously wants it for obvious reasons. It's nice to have. But to give it up to Perth, of all teams, this is not what those other teams wanted. Because, you know, we got down to a final series between Perth and Sydney or Melbourne. That home court, oh my God, that place would be rocking. That'd be a tough one to play in. And I think a tough environment like that, especially with the calls I get over there. Anyway, we're not going to go into that sort of malarkey. But yeah, as I said, in this series, I'm tipping Perth to take game one. Brisbane to take game two and have a 2-1 series. I'm making a bold prediction with Sydney Melbourne. Sydney have had this long break. They're rested. They're good to go. They've had that stuff with Andrew Gaze where he's been sort of, I think they've handled that really well under the circumstances. Obviously, the best result would just be to keep him and you never have to deal with this, but they didn't want him as coach. They want Rob Beveridge, and by the sound of it, you know, the fact that those two things happen almost simultaneously is not a mistake, I don't think. So, you know, I think they've handled it well. They haven't said, like, oh, maybe we'll recess the season. They said, no, he's not coming back. This is the last swan song for him and Copeland. Make it happen. And I think those guys are going to respond to that. You know, the finals are so much about a coach on the sideline looking at the game and going, who's getting up, who's hot, who's not, where have we got an advantage? And you look at Sydney's rotations and they are like ironclad. The only times they've been a discrepancy is when someone's gone to foul trouble. Like you look at, I was looking at Bowen's minute numbers for that track of his games, and every time, 15, 18, 22, 13 minutes, it's, you know, it's a bit of up and down there, but that's a pretty solid sort of, you know, 17 and a half minute average that he gets there. And there's very little change, and more than anything, change in the time of game that he comes in and the type of lineup he steps into when he does. And that's the same with all of them. Is Gaze going to be able to, now that he's not coming back, is he going to loosen up? Probably not. And for that reason, I said I was going to make a bold prediction. I think Sydney are going to win game one. They're $2.32. Melbourne are $1.61. Sydney have the best player on the floor. Okay, that if someone had a gun to my head and said, who's going to win? I'd say Sydney are going to win because they have the best basketball player on the basketball court. They have Andrew Bogut. He is the best defender. And if he can put the ball in the hole, I think they can win. The fact that they're down in Melbourne hostile crowd, that doesn't bother guys like Lish, Randall, Bogut, Newell. It doesn't bother these guys. They don't care. And then it's not like they're traveling over to Perth. No offense to the Melbourne crowd, they're very excitable, but they're nothing compared to the Perth crowd or the Perth whistle. So I think they're going to win game one and therefore win the series. They may even do it odd where they lose. I think they're actually going to win game one and two and end it. But there may even come a time when they win game one and three. They win both on the road because they haven't been a good home team. But I'm calling it. I think they're going to win game one. I might have egg on my face. They haven't won a lot in Melbourne, but, you know, I'm going for it. One of them's got to win it, and it really does come down to those matchups. Guys, bit of an odd podcast. I hope it's been eventful. There's some really good previews on the finals. This recorded one I've done is not one of the best of them. Definitely look to Warren Yu. I really hope I'm pronouncing that right. And Liam Santa Maria on this one. They did some really nice stuff. Big thank you to the guys at the Trash Talk, NBL Trash Talk podcast, who mentioned me on their last program. I really appreciate that. Guys, as always, I'm pretty active on Twitter, at NBL Pocket Pod. You can find me there and ask me questions or whatever. NBL Pocket Podcast at gmail.com if you want to send a more formal question or a longer one. I was hoping to actually record this episode and do it as a YouTube video, but that didn't happen. Just a bit too busy. Couldn't be bothered. Sorry. Looking at everything else, you've got my picks. I'm going to put them up on the Twitter in a moment. To the guy who wrote a comment on the podcast review on Apple iTunes, I didn't take a sip of water this podcast. I mean, I speak this whole time by myself, and sometimes I get a bit thirsty. It's thirsty work. Thirsty work, not thirsty merc. By the way, just to clarify, those hardworking rock stars, they had a dubber, I love them too. But it's thirsty work, but didn't take a single drink of water in this one, so I'm pretty proud of myself. Guys, they're all the call to actions that Google suggests you do on these podcast things. As I always say, guys, you got to get tickets to these games. People are telling me the price of tickets has gone up that much. It really hasn't, not the ones I've looked at buying, so get out, just go onto the website, Ticket Tech or whatever, buy two tickets. Just buy them. You'll find someone to go with, you know, whether it's your dad, you know. How often do you get to tell your dad you love him? Take him to the game, or your mother, or your sister. Because obviously if you don't, I'm going to buy three tickets and I'm going to take them both. I will take your mother and sister. I've been prone to do that. Guys, good luck, and I'll be back later on in the week after, probably on Friday, this was a preview. I'll be back with a review. See you later.